the number of the breaches of standard of care I identify in my reports are too numerous to count, but some of them stand out. One was the manner by which Father Cheryl was evicted from the hospital and its impact on the outcome in Gray Shara. And I found this to be shameful conduct on behalf of the hospital. The second issue were the breaches of standard of care related to informed consent. And I find it indefensible that this patient was given medications, very dangerous medications, not theoretically dangerous medications, but medications proved by the medical record to be dangerous to this patient without informed consent. The events on the 13th are very difficult to recognize. The repeated administration of Presidex on the 13th was not just a breach of the standard of care. It was insane. The administration of morphine on 10-13 to a patient who was unconscious, unresponsive, had lost her blood pressure, had no palpable pulse, and whose respiratory pattern was screaming to anybody who would look. The administration of morphine in that situation was the worst clinical decision I have ever witnessed in over 46 years of medical practice.
Welcome to Worldview Matters, discussing controversial issues, discerning current events, defending biblical Christianity. No topic off limits. And now, here's your host, David Fiorazzo.
Well, friends, welcome. Today we've got Scott Shera back with us, the website OurAmazingGrace.net. What we're going to be talking about is the result of the extensive court case and the jury trial that they just got through, and not the results we were looking for, but what can we learn from this? The title of today's podcast, Medical Nightmare, Informed Consent is Dead. It really does blow your mind if you look at all the evidence that was presented. So I want to bring in Scott Shera, our good friend, brother. Thank you for coming in the studio again.
Well, it is really great to see you. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you too. Now, explain that clip. I hope it was very clear for people to hear what that doctor was testifying about. He was shocked at talking about the drugs that were administered to Grace, and anything else you want to point out about what we just heard to open the podcast?
Sure. So the drugs that were administered to Grace were Presidex, lorazepam, and morphine. And Dr. Burdine, what a man. So when he reviewed the records, he thought he was called to do this case. He has never been a plaintiff's expert before. He's only been on the defense side representing doctors. This is the first case he was a plaintiff for, and he did not take a penny personally to do the work.
Wow.
That's how much he thought. He said this is the most egregious case he's ever seen, and he wanted to do this work to get it out to the public.
So let's jump right to the end, and then we'll explain a lot. I'll have you explain a lot.
Sure.
I have my theories. Why do you think that a jury could not absorb all the evidence that you presented, that your team presented on Grace, how she was treated, not only the drugs, but the DNR. And friends, I want to tell you right now, if you're not familiar with this case with Grace Shera, 19-year-old with Down syndrome, killed at the COVID hospital in Appleton, Wisconsin, please go to worldviewmatters.tv, catch up on our podcast we did with Scott. We must have done a half a dozen approximately. So just look back at some of the interviews we've done, plus OurAmazingGrace.net. So, Scott, why do you think you just needed three jurors to decide with you? Because there's 12 jurors, and to win, I guess you need 10 out of 12. What happened, in your opinion?
Yeah, so in Wisconsin, you need 10 of 12 to win. So either the defense needed 10 of 12 or we needed 10 of 12. So the reason you say three is because if we would have gotten three, it would have at least been a hung jury. But they swiftly decided in about 15 minutes, and they decided 11-1 against us. So, you know, I was completely shocked by that. I'm not surprised. And, you know, why am I shocked? And I'll go through that second. But you're asking me, you know, why aren't you surprised, basically? And yeah. the reason I'm not surprised is because, first of all, the age of the jury. The one person who stood with us, she was the oldest person on the jury. So, you know, older people have been kicked around a little bit more, right? So the average age of the jury, I would put into the early 30s. They have been programmed by the public fool system. They've been programmed by the system to trust the beast. And I think it would have been very hard for them if you process all the evidence we presented. So we made the case about the medicine, Precedex, lorazepam, and morphine, and the overdoses that Grace had, and the illegal do not resuscitate. The defense made the case about vaccines, COVID, ivermectin, you know, all the things that I have learned subsequent to Grace's death that they called conspiracies.
Right.
So that does not sit well with the general population, right? You look like you're a fringe person. Yeah. And
can we pause right there for a
sure.
moment? That doesn't sit well with the general population because many of them believe that anyone who brought up objections to what the government was pushing and what Big Pharma was pushing was a conspiracy theorist. Why? The average person did not use their own brain to research. They heard the talking points on the liberal, Democrat, progressive media owned by Big Pharma, a lot of the media, and what they heard on social media, and there's the younger people in the 20 to 35 range, social media, universities, if they went to college. So it was stacked against you to begin with. That's why you're not surprised.
That's why I'm not surprised. And it was stacked against us, not just with, you know, the concept of a jury of your peers. If it would have been a jury of my peers, we would have won.
Yeah.
But it's not a jury of your peers. The jury also...
Why wasn't that, like, the jury selection? Why weren't there more... not elderly, but at least grab someone in their 40s or 50s, you know?
Well, it's supposedly random. So, I mean, you know, that, so you get the, you know, the luck of the draw in that regard. You know, but then the other piece of it is, you know, if you think about it, somebody that's on a jury, you know, that's quite a commitment. Mm. You know, they committed 2 weeks and 4 days of their time. You know, that's a long period of time to commit and only make $12 a day. You know, that's tough. So, I mean, you can have some empathy for the jury wanting to get it over with quickly, but yet they had a responsibility that's bigger than wanting to get over with the verdict quickly.
Yeah.
The thing that was maybe influenced the jury more than anything was this idea of making the case about COVID and conspiracies. And if you rewind back to the last time I saw you, we had a 2-day hearing on May 19th and 20th, and a number of things get decided during that hearing. One is, it's called motions in limine. And motions in limine is a fancy word to say what evidence should be allowed or disallowed at trial. So, of course, our team said we only want the trial to be about the medicines and the illegal do not resuscitate order, Grace's care from October 6th to October 13th to 21. And so we filed motions in limine to say all of Scott's research post October 13th to 21 should not be allowed in, and the judge disallowed that. And so consequently, the defense was able to bring in those things and portray me as
a wacko.
A wacko, exactly.
Is there a, on that point, is there a method they used that was devious? Did they lie? How did they present you to the jury?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. So, yes, there was a method that they used that was devious, and they used lies. So, for example, one of the lies that was presented was that I turned down remdesivir, and if I would have only gone with what the doctor recommended, Grace would be alive. So they tried to frame it that it was my fault that Grace died.
Oh, well, goodness.
First of all, that was a lie because I was never offered remdesivir. I would have not taken it anyway because we were wise to remdesivir before going into the hospital, but I was never offered it. So that was a direct lie.
Were you able to refute that during the trial?
We were able to refute it, but it's, I mean, you know how media is once the first thing is heard. Right. And so then how they would frame things is they would cherry pick certain things out of my depositions and then ask me questions about those. And, you know, so then our team, the advice that I had from our team, which was right, is that try to stick with just short answers to their questions. So it doesn't, it's called opening the door. So it doesn't open up the door for even more conspiracies to be brought in. And, you know, it's conspiracies in quotes,
right,
as you know.
Right, in air quotes.
Right.
So you're working, I have a very brief summary on the trial that you sent out on your in your newsletter. You're working on a very extensive one. When will that be sent out or presented to the public?
That will be released after the 4th of July. So next, so I've got it done in draft form. I've already reviewed it twice. I have one of our attorneys looking at it. I just want to make sure that I've crossed all the T's and dotted the I's because it's extensive.
Okay, so people will be able to see that now.
Correct.
Because we're pre-recording this.
Yes.
So you can, you guys can go to ouramazinggrace.net. Is that the best place they can go to get the summary?
Exactly. Okay. And it'll be in the upper right-hand corner. You see it on the screen. It says subscribe to our newsletter. It'll be released in a newsletter.
Okay. So, friends, I just want to share what was briefly sent out because that's what I have in hand here. You say that your team presented a better case, you had better witnesses, better experts, and had the truth on your side, which I agree. The defense, through their so-called experts, they said that by being in a hospital, you, the patient, you are giving implied consent and that the drugs that euthanized your daughter, Grace, were normal in an ICU, so no informed consent is necessary. Doctors informing the family is not even necessary for the two prior overdoses, and the third overdose is the one that killed Grace. Finally, their experts stated that a DNI equals DNR, and a doctor can unilaterally place a DNR, do not resuscitate, on a patient without consent, without a witness, without a signature, and without putting a DNR bracelet on the patient. I think that is something you need to go into a little bit more for us.
It blows my mind. I mean, this is literally what the jury decided, and that should scare anybody to either not go to a hospital or be prepared beyond anything that you've ever thought of. So how is it even possible that this could happen?
Yeah.
So, I mean, everybody heard Dr. Burdine at the start of the show. He was our doctor expert, and, you know, he's obviously he's solid. You know, mm-hmm. he reviewed the records and he was solid. They brought in experts from all over the country, six of them, two of them from Johns Hopkins, and their experts said that everything that the doctors and nurses did in Grace's care was the standard of care, that it was normal. And that's the key.
Isn't that part of the problem, though?
It's part of the problem because people think of this idea of standard of care as like it's in a book someplace. Well, it's not in a book someplace. What it is it's a subjective opinion. And the definition is what would a reasonable doctor do in a similar situation? So these high-priced experts came in and lied on the stand and said, what happened to Grace follows the standard of care, so consequently, there can be no negligence on the part of the doctor or the nurse.
Okay, we've got to take a brief pause. We're with Scott Shera. Again, friends, if you missed the history of this case in the background, go to worldviewmatters.tv. In the upper right in the search, put in Scott Shera, S-C-H-A-R-A. When we come back, we're going to talk about an amazing clip, Joe Rogan. Your case made the Joe Rogan's podcast.
Yes.
He was surprised, and this is what was eye-opening to me. Someone like that had no clue, apparently, what was going on during COVID, that people were being killed and hospitals were not standards of care. They were following COVID protocols. Right. This clip is coming up right after the break. We'll be right back.
Today's show is brought to you by Harbingers Daily, world news biblically understood. Stay informed at harbingersdaily.com.
There's actually a lawsuit today that's first jury trial in the country over these hospital protocols where they had a young woman with Down syndrome. They basically euthanized her. They gave her a DNR order, even though she didn't have one. And the father has just been wonderful. It's a Shara family.
Why did they do that? They euthanized her for what?
I've seen this. I have reviewed records from these hospital patients. and they'll euthanize them. They need the bed. They say, well, they're going to die anyway.
What was this person in the hospital for?
COVID protocol. So
and they wait. So they were in the hospital with COVID, and they gave them something to kill them?
Yeah, that happened. I'm sorry, but that happened. People, they give them morphine and insulin. And yeah.
That's common.
Yeah. I've reviewed charts. In this situation, they gave her a DNR, which is do not resuscitate. And if they look like they're dying, you don't do anything, which that was not the case. So they're suing for battery, which is one way of getting around the PREP Act, because the PREP Act is very hard to penetrate. The PREP Act protects everybody, all the doctors, all the hospitals, from any wrongdoing during COVID. So it's been this big challenge trying to get around the PREP Act. In this case, has hope of getting around the PREP Act because they're charging for battery. And they're in trial. It started today. It's in Wisconsin. So that gives me hope.
Okay, friends. So we got to talk about this. We're with Scott Scherer, the website ouramazinggrace.net. So we explained, you did, which I agree because we talked before the podcast, how the average Wisconsinite, the citizen on the jury, and in any state across the country, with the exception of maybe like Utah or Idaho or somewhere, you know, a red state where people are very protective of their rights. And people fell for this because they heard all about conspiracy theories. And so that age range of like, you know, 15 to 35,
right?
They're gone. But Joe Rogan, he didn't hear about what Cuomo did in New York and killing all the elderly in the nursing homes during COVID and what the hospital protocols were doing. Even with the amount of whistleblowers now that have come forward several years later that have said, yeah, this was going on. And Joe Rogan's like, really? Talk about that. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, first, of course, I was extremely happy that we received national attention. You know, praise God, the New American live streamed the trial with the help of CHD, and, you know, millions of people saw the trial, which was, you know, that was one of our goals, is that's how you wake people up, right? Yeah. And to have it on Joe Rogan, that was Dr. Mary Bowden out of Texas. She's become a friend. I was on her podcast, and that's how she knew of the story. And okay. She chose to share it on Joe Rogan.
Awesome.
But Joe Rogan being shocked, you would think, you know, this guy is one of the people who is awake, right?
You would
think. And so for him to be shocked, it shows you how deep the psyop with programming and the controlled media really is. So yeah, I was shocked by that also.
So what is the PREP Act that she mentioned?
Yeah, that's really a great question. So the PREP Act was passed in December of 2005 under the radar, like most of these things, as part of a defense appropriations bill, but it had nothing to do with defense. What it does is anytime the HHS secretary declares a public health emergency, and then the FDA issues emergency use authorization countermeasures, those countermeasures are immune from liability. So, for example, in Grace's case, if we were offered remdesivir and we took it and Grace subsequently died, because she had remdesivir and that was a covered countermeasure, we would not have had a lawsuit.
Yeah.
Similarly, if Grace was ever on a ventilator, we would not have a lawsuit because that was also a covered countermeasure with immunity from liability. You know, so praise God, you know, the odds of us getting to this trial.
Talk about the odds.
I mean, it's near zero.
You
so
have
first
the
of all, I've got the numbers here. So first of all, you know, we would have had to survive the PREP Act, which you can't because it's by definition immunity from liability. So here's where I'm quoting this out of an HBO documentary by the title of Bleed Out. And Steve Burrows did Bleed Out, and he sued Aurora Health in Wisconsin because they maimed his mom. She had a surgery and she didn't die, but he was able to file a medical malpractice lawsuit, went all the way to jury trial and lost, similar to us. Jeez. Well, he put these statistics together. He said annually in Wisconsin, there's 27,000 patients that are either injured or die in a hospital.
Just in Wisconsin.
Okay. Out of those 27,000, there's 84 lawsuits filed. Out of those 84 lawsuits that are filed, 22 go to trial. So we're in that class. So that's 0.08%. Then out of the 22, 3 win in favor of the plaintiff. So that's 13.3% of the 0.08%. So you can see, you know, statistically, it was near impossible. Even worse than that, the cost of the lawsuit was $1 million. Mm. The most we could win, because it's a medical malpractice lawsuit, is $750,000. So it is truly, it was a David versus Goliath. God, of course, is still in charge. He got us into this. And so what I see now is he obviously thinks that more people are going to be saved by a loss than a win.
Well, if it gets out there, continues to get out there, and you've done a great job, and you've been on, what did you say, the trial ended within the last 2 weeks, you've already done 30 interviews?
Yeah, 30 already.
Friends, this man doesn't sleep. I don't know how he does it. But anyway, so let's talk about this now, the verbal consent that was signed.
Yes.
Actually, wait a minute. It wasn't signed.
I want to set this up.
Okay, so we've got a
Mary,
copy of this.
Mary Bowden on Joe Rogan mentioned that we have a battery claim. So I want to set this up. This is critical. So when the trial started, we had five claims. We had wrongful death, medical malpractice, lack of informed consent, medical battery, and a declaratory judgment for the illegal DNR and med combination. The battery was dropped after all the trial evidence was in. So to have a battery claim, you have to have two elements. Number one is an unwanted touching. So that would be giving Grace Precedex, lorazepam, and morphine. That's an unwanted touching without your knowledge. So we had both of those. Okay. But the judge told us he's leaning toward the idea that you're giving implied consent just by being in a hospital.
Oh,
so then the knowledge things gets out. So we presented the last day of evidence. We presented this document to show the judge there was no consent ever, and he still decided against the battery claim. So
there
what
it
this
is.
Document,
explain what we're seeing.
All right. So this document I found, of course, in the medical records, and you can see the stamp on the bottom. It's right out of the medical records that were provided as part of the medical records request. And so people would be familiar with the concept that you go into a hospital and they want you to sign your rights away, right? It's called a general consent document. So this is the third page of it. Grace and I, on October 6th of 2021, we got into the emergency room at approximately 2:10. So that would be 14:10 by military time.
Okay.
So you see the timestamp here is 14:27. So 17 minutes after we got into the emergency room, somebody had a phantom conversation with Grace while me, her dad, her advocate, and her power of attorney is in the room with her.
You were with her the whole time.
I was with her the entire time, but somebody had a phantom conversation with her.
Meaning they didn't.
It never happened. I'm positive it never happened. And you can see how nefarious it is because they never even acknowledged who the person was who had the phantom conversation and the reason Grace didn't sign it. So what they used as their excuse that we gave consent is a document that Grace supposedly orally agreed to. This is a girl that has Down syndrome, and Grace orally agreed to a general consent document, and that's the excuse that they used that we gave implied consent for being in a hospital. And even the jury saw that, the judge saw it, and the judge denied the battery claim, even though seeing that in the jury, I mean, you can't, I'm still in shock, but not surprised.
Yeah. I mean, that just to not allow this, though, this seems quite, egregious.
It's more than that. It's fraudulent.
Yes.
This is fraud.
Yeah, exactly. So why did the judge explain why he didn't allow this?
He did not explain. You know, we have the common question that comes up is, are you going to appeal? And there are two things that we can appeal on right now. One is this battery claim, and the second one is the judge not accepting our motions in limine, so allowing the things that were unrelated to the case in. And so I'm working with the attorneys right now to determine if we're going to appeal or not. It's, personally, it's not all that exciting to appeal just because of the work involved. But if we're going to appeal, we're going to appeal. And, you know, the time frame isn't, it's soon, but it's not urgent. We don't have to decide today.
Okay, so you don't know yet. So we talked a little bit. We've got just a couple minutes left. We've talked a little bit about, well, people's assumptions. When I read through this, when I looked at that, when I saw your trial summary, your short one, and again, friends, the extensive trial summary that Scott put together, it's on the website. It's disappointing that people have been trained for the start of time, at least in America, at least when the system, hospital system, was, developed, that people will almost always give the white coat, the doctor, and the hospital the benefit of the doubt. Almost always. That's a hard pattern of belief to break through. That's one of the things you tried to accomplish indirectly, right?
Well, that's why one. That's
2 minutes left.
From a technical perspective, you know, a physical piece of why I speak out, you know, there's physical and spiritual. The physical side is I don't want this to happen to anybody else. I felt trapped to the white coat. You know, the idea that they take the Hippocratic Oath, which we've been programmed to believe is first do no harm. Well, it's not. It's an oath to satanic gods. You know, now I know this, so I want to, you know, I want to share this with everybody so that they, even my worst enemy, I don't want this to happen to their best buddy. You know, don't trust the white coat. It doesn't mean that they cannot earn your trust, but the whole system is designed against us. The people who are involved in the system, if they accept Medicare or Medicaid, that means they have to follow those rules. And those rules are not designed to help us. They are designed to ration care. You know, we were talking about the budget before we got on air, and the idea that we have to balance a budget is the excuse that they're using to ration care. And rationing care means hastening death. And so one of the things I tell everybody is, if you have the opportunity, drop your medical insurance so you get your critical thinking back, and find cash pay doctors that are not taking Medicare or Medicaid. Yep. And we have the resource links on Grace's website, because people need medical help.
Yep.
But if you are in that system, it is completely and utterly corrupt.
Well, once you enter, whether you sign something or not, apparently you've lost your rights. It seems.
Well, it's not just seems. I mean, the jury decided that.
Yep. That's what we can take away from one of the takeaways from this. We've got a minute left. Now, this is not to say, friends, that we're claiming every doctor that goes in is satanic. Every doctor or nurse that goes in knows that they are going to follow these protocols, even if they know it's going to harm a patient. That's not the case. But COVID was a great example of they just had to follow it. And when any doctor says, okay, we need more tests, who makes money? This is a business. Yeah. Hospitals make more money the more tests they have, the more drugs they prescribe. And then there's Big Pharma. We didn't even touch on Big Pharma, because we've done that before. Scott, thank you. To be continued. We'll follow up with you again. But God bless you for all the work you've done and the awareness you are trying to raise in the big fight that we are still in. So thank you for all you're doing.
Well, God bless you, David. It's Thanks. Really good to see you again.
Same here. Friends, pray. Just take care of yourself. Stay healthy. But anyway, understand what's going on behind the scenes. And that's what Scott has done, all this research. You can, again, look up past episodes on our website. God bless you. And as always, keep speaking the truth about things that matter.